Hey guys, this is Danny McDermott from The Danny McDermott Show. If you want to see our show live, it's every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Trust me, you want to see it then. You'll see all the screw-ups. It's great. Our show is an adult show, I must admit, but that's only because we're childish. Most of the guests that we have on the show are my friends, so you can just watch us hang out as buddies. It's fun. Just chill, relax, enjoy.
If you enjoy our original content, please consider becoming a supporter on Anchor so that we can continue to bring you laughs every week.
The following program may contain immature situations, themes, and is intended for an adult audience. The opinions expressed here do not necessarily reflect the views of everyone else working on the show. Viewer discretion is advised. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Danny McDermott Show. Thank you for coming back. Anybody who's there, which is right now, nobody. So this is going to be a good show. I'm very excited, actually. This is a big show for me. J. Chris Newberg is going to be on the show tonight. I'm very excited about that. I had one of my buddies, by the way. It's spring break coming. Kevin, you hear about that? Remember spring break?
Sure.
I never had one. You know where I went? Syracuse. That's where I went. Big spring break.
Sure.
Rosie O'Grady's Dinosaurs, the Junkyard. Anybody who has lived in Syracuse would know those places. I got to turn this. There we go. Which is kind of coincidental because my buddy just told me that horny goat weed helps the libido. So I imagine there's a lot of horny goat weed down in spring break. I would imagine that.
Maybe in Syracuse too.
I'll tell you, man, it's a different spring break this year, man. It's not like it was when we were kids with the COVID and everything. There's a lot of differences pre and post COVID, you know? I mean, now kids aren't worried about a tight bikini. They're looking at that Speedo face mask. You know, bro, check out the outline of those lips and nose. It's almost see-through. Man, I hope she enters a wet mask contest. If she has antibodies, I'm going to lose my shit. That's how people are going to flash people now. You know what I mean? They're going to flash their mask. So we have the parties are going to be different, right? You know, you're not going to be have a normal party. It's going to be a vaccine party, you know, instead of shots for drinks, they're going to be screaming for vaccination shots. You know, a lot of them are going to be on what is it? Zelle? Is that what it is?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. They're going to Zell you some beads if you zoom your tits. Your boobs. Damn it, I forgot. To tone it down, Kevin. It was supposed to be boobs. The super spreader is the event now, not the girl who was very liberated. Hand jobs are now performed with hand sanitizer, which can definitely sting. Now it's from you get go from socially awkward to socially distance, from passing out to a passport because it's you got to go to Mexico to have a real party. You know, instead of street drugs, they're going to get the drugs from grandma's medicine cabinet and hang out in the basement. It's I don't know, man. It's crazy. From a thong bikini to a trikini, because that's what they're calling it now, with the mask and anyway. I don't know about these jokes, Kevin, but, you know, we're going with it. We're going with it. So parents are running the spring breaks, which is, I just don't agree with that. You know, it's not going to be as good as a normal spring break, you know, because the kids are going to be home partied now. You know what I mean? Instead of a wet t-shirt contest with hot young girls, it's going to be the neighborhood moms, which really sucks because they never invite the mom you want to see in a bikini. Followed by a nice round of get dressed poker. Really? I don't know, Kevin. We need a new writer. We need another writer. No, it's all right. Twerking is unsafe and replaced by the Macarena. And the family Monopoly game, when you pass go to get 200, you have to take a drink. That's the drinking game. And the drink is a Tom Collins because it's your parents. You know, you do the chicken fight in the pool, which is, you know, shoulder wars or whatever, informal game played in a lake or a swimming pool. You know, now it's going to be played with dad and mom against the son and grandma. People are going to slam Manhattan gimlets in old fashioned. It's just going to be terrible, Kevin. Let's just put it that way. It's going to be a horrible spring break for a lot of these kids. I feel bad for them, but not so bad because, like I said, my spring break was Syracuse. And the last day of spring break is going to be a fun day of spring cleaning. Not the same. Not the same.
No, it is not.
So it's National Chocolate Covered Raisins Day. Why do people choose days for things like this? You know, it's like you got to make a day for today. We got to make a day for today. What about raisins? No, raisins are too boring. Chocolate covered raisins. Let's make that a national holiday. And it's World Tuberculosis Day. That's something to celebrate. Well, I guess you get that from the chocolate covered raisins. I don't know. All right, so note to self, hire another writer.
Put a note in a calculator. What was that contraption?
I don't know. I was pretending on my phone.
Oh, okay.
All right, so I'm excited. This is a great show. I want to go right ahead and bring on our guest. He's an old friend. I love the guy. He's been doing my shows for the last 7 years. J. Chris Newberg is a producer and a writer known for Money Where Your Mouth Is, 2013, the 40-year-old virgin who knocked up Sarah Marshall and felt super bad about it, 2010, and Emo Genius, 2017, among other things. We're going to talk all about it. J. Chris is currently working on the show The Chase. Please welcome our guest, J. Chris Newberg.
Hey, what's happening? That's cool.
Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on the show, man.
My pleasure.
So I think we've been Facebook friends before we actually met in person.
That's possible.
When I was in New York, I think we were Facebook friends, but I can't be sure. So now you've been doing comedy for, God, how long have you been doing it? You've been doing it forever.
Like 2 weeks next Thursday.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. I think I might do a show. I think I started doing comedy in 1999.
Wow. Okay. Wow. And how did you get your start? What made you decide to do it?
Frustrated musician, just like most people. I've been performing like in a band since I was 17. So I've actually been on stage since like 87.
So, and you play guitar, right? Lead guitar?
No, I was just rhythm and songwriter person.
Okay, cool. What was the name of the band?
We were called the Voodoo Hippies. We were popular-ish in the Detroit metro area. And by that, I mean if our friends came out.
So when you started doing comedy, it was mostly the guitar, right?
Yeah, it was mostly guitar initially. And then eventually I just kind of figured out how to say stuff in addition to playing stuff.
Right. I mean, did you do parody songs at first and stuff?
No, I've never done a parody.
Really?
Actually, that's not true. I've done one parody my entire life. And I did a spoof of Bon Jovi's Dead or Alive where Bon Jovi was instead of a busboy. And he was, and he was bussing tables, table five. But that was the only parody I've ever done.
So most of your stuff is original comedy songs.
Of course.
Yeah. So what was your first album?
What's my first album?
Yeah, I was just curious.
My first comedy album?
Yeah.
I think it came out in 99. I think it was called Sucker for a Pretty Face. And it was just like a picture of a sucker and a girl and the number four. And that started the puns on my record. It did okay. I mean, for a local record, it was fine. And it's just been weird. Like, comedy records are so strange in general because it's like, it's just such a strange, you're asking people to purchase things that are free.
What do you mean free?
You can, like, okay, if you're a comic and you have an album, it's streaming. You can listen to it on iTunes. You can listen to it on Spotify. You can listen to it wherever you want. No one buys CDs anymore. No one downloads anything anymore because you pay $8 a month and you get an unlimited music, unlimited comedy, unlimited podcasts, unlimited whatever. So all of a sudden, you're out there trying to get people to pay for something that they're already paying for. And it's a very, very tricky thing. And then, like, with satellite radio and all of the money being made with Sound Exchange for comedians who are making good money, it's just the platform and the percentages for Sirius is much lower. And same thing with iTunes. And it's like, you have to, someone released a chart and it's something like you have to listen to an entire record 11 times for it to count as being purchased once. For, and of that, $7.99 or whatever the total is, you end up getting like 12 cents a record or 12 cents a song or something. The money is not like when I had my number one record, the last one that was number one for 13 weeks on Billboard Comedy, I think my residuals weren't much different than when I wasn't getting airplay at all.
Okay.
It's just, so it's like, it's hard for a comic to make a bunch of money in residuals.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's okay. That's what I pay Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
Future residuals.
It's depressing.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Now one of the things I mean, there's so many things we could talk about.
Okay.
I don't know exactly. I know you toured with Dane Cook, for a while. Mm-hmm. Was it one tour or was it which one was that? The tour
greatest, hit, greatest hits tour.
Greatest hits tour. All right. And, so you did that. So you, and you, when I moved to LA, you were a regular at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah, I think I still am when it's open.
And, one of the things that really impressed me, for me, this is impressive. I don't know how impressive it is to other people, but when you were touring the country by yourself, you toured people's living rooms. Can you tell us about that and how you came up with that idea?
Yeah. I mean, it's just basically, I wanted to go on the road and I couldn't get clubs to book me. So I knew that I had a base. So I just basically would pick a region and I would kind of circle it and be like, all right, I can live here for like 4 days. I need to do X number of shows. I'll play wherever. And it was, there were parts of it that were phenomenal and there were parts of it that were really uncomfortable. And it was, you know, it was great. I mean, I played a lot of the times you play, people have these big parties and you're like playing on a balcony in front of 100 people. Like one time I played in front of a bunch of Detroit Lions at Stafford's house, not Stafford, the kicker, Prater at his house. And it was just like this huge gigantic house and all these people there. And it was amazing. And I remember like 4 days later, some kid saw me on America's Got Talent and he begged his parents to pay me to come. And it was me and his dad and him in an apartment. And I was just like, here we go. And I just did my whole fucking set. I was like, I don't give a fuck. And then I was just like, and they're like, are you going to sleep over? And I'm like, no, I'm going to get a hotel.
Oh my God. That's awesome.
That's
got to be the most awkward set ever.
I mean, it's comedy. I was on Clubhouse yesterday and some kid was like, oh, Jay Chris, I wanted to talk to you. He's like, 20 years ago, you did a show at my college. You did our pancake breakfast. I wanted to apologize because that must have sucked. I'm like, I don't even fucking remember that show. He's like, yeah. He's like, you came in and we were serving everybody pancakes and you were doing jokes at the time. I'm like, oh, that sounds horrible. And he's like, it was. I'm sorry.
That's hilarious. I mean, God, that's the toughest thing about stand-up. It's not the good shows that make it tough. It's the bad shows. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And it's, I don't know, how do you as a comedian with all the shows, and they're bad shows, by the way, for those of you watching, they're not bad shows necessarily because of the comedian. Usually they're bad shows because they're horribly produced, horribly lit, bad sound, bad seating, all that kind of stuff. And there's more of those than the good shows. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. But I mean, that's with anything.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like there's a lot of accountants. I bet a bunch of them suck. You know what I mean? It's just like, I bet. And as far as, you know, comedy is concerned, it's like of course there's way more shows that are not good than there are, because it's super easy to call yourself a comedian. You just have to say, I'm a comedian.
Right.
Or I'm a comic, or I have a show, or I'm whatever. And it's okay. If you're a comic, great.
Yeah. And you get those people who just started doing comedy a month ago and they're calling themselves a comedian.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, it's, you know, there's no reason they can't, and good for them. And I don't know. Like, I have no idea what post-pandemic comedy looks like. It's very strange. It's not at all sustainable for a comic as a full-time occupation. There's no possible way. It's like, because all of the money, like you're going to all these different clubs and all of them have seating restrictions and like, so temporary. They were telling me there was an agent who I was talking to, and I was like, is anyone working? Is anyone touring? Is anyone whatever? I won't say the name of the agency, but I will give you their initials. And they were and they were saying that they have comics who are, to make the exact same amount of money they were making prior to pandemic, going to a region and doing 16, 17 shows in a week.
Wow. Jeez.
That's like Vegas numbers. Like, Vegas is 14, sometimes 15 shows a week. And it's dreadful. And it's like, if you're doing that in, like, I don't know, Kansas, I can't imagine that being fun at all. I mean, it's just like, I like comedy, but like, if you're going to talk nonstop for 15 hours, it's going to suck.
That's crazy. I think Tom Cotter was on the show. I don't know if you know Tom.
I know the name.
He's a New York comic. He came in second in America's Got Talent. He's an old friend of mine. I used to book him in New York, but he was saying he has to go to Texas and Florida. That's okay. The only way he can make any real money right now.
Well, you know, a lot of people say Texas is, you know, booming and it's the thing, and great. I mean, I 100% would tour if I wasn't working, but I'm lucky enough to be working at the moment.
Let's talk about how you got into that, because you got into producing and writing. Did you get in? You got, obviously, you must have gotten into writing for shows first, and then you started producing, or how did that work?
Well, it's easy to become a producer on a television show, because the majority of the television shows that you work on when you get started are reality or competition or game. So since they're usually not union shows or guild shows, they're not allowed to hire writers. So they hire story producers or, you know, different types of people in charge, etc. But you're just basically a writer. And, but yeah, I mean, it's just like, it's so funny. The first head writing situation I had was that, I completely forgot about the show altogether, The Money Where Your Mouth Is. That used to be a game show on Hulu that Jay Moore was the host of. And we did 10 episodes. And it was just like way ahead of its time. It was this really cool, like guy dungeon sports question game. It was really fun, but it was super early. And I learned TV early on with that. And that's when I got hired on Idiot Test, and then Beach Exam, and everything else kind of happened after that.
Yeah. And you're a fantastic writer, bro. And I read, what was that series you sent me that I read? That's like three parts.
Oh, the marijuana thing.
Yeah, that was fantastic, dude.
Thank you. It was fun. I wrote that. I worked on that with a buddy of mine named Andy. He did the majority of the lifting. He's a great writer. I learned a lot from him. yeah, I mean, it's just, writing's just repetition.
Can you tell us about that or no?
About writing?
No, about the about that.
About
the marijuana
Oh, I mean, that's like two projects ago. I mean, we had a project that was about a brother and sister twins, got a message from God that they need to find the original strand of marijuana that was from the Garden of Eden to save the world.
It's great.
And it was just basically a road rally based around marijuana. And it was kind of cool, and it was really out there. And we got it as far as I think we got an Emmy Award winning showrunner attached, and we got a director attached, but we never got it picked up.
It's so good though, dude. You had those, what they were, albino killer nuns?
Albino nuns. Albinuns.
It was amazing. They were just like, it was, guys, if you want to see some outrageous materials, his writing is phenomenal. I can't wait till you get some of that stuff really off the ground and on the screen, because.
Thank you. Yeah, me too. That'd be fun.
Man, I could totally see Tiffany Haddish. I told you that, I think, at the time when I read it. I could totally see Tiffany Haddish playing the sister in that.
Oh, absolutely. She'd be great. I mean, it's, you know, but what, who isn't bugging her with stuff these days, right?
You know, it's funny because I knew her before, before she was famous. I think you did. We all did. But she, I interviewed her for the Death Challenge. You remember that?
Uh-huh.
I interviewed you for it too, right?
Yep.
And, so I had her number and I texted her, but you know, before she got famous, she'd answer my text. Now it's like,
she doesn't. Oh, that's not her phone number. That goes to her assistant.
Yeah, I'm sure. No. But it's, that's the thing. When you become to get to that level, you have to hand off that kind of thing to assistants and stuff like that, because otherwise you just don't have time.
Yeah, it's true.
Right. So hopefully we'll be there soon.
Yeah.
So, what other shows are you working on right now? I know you're working on The Big with what's the one you're working on now? The Chase?
Yeah, that doesn't start getting really crazy shooting for like a couple more weeks. And we're also having like contract stuff go on right now with I think it's becoming a union show, which is cool. And I'm also working on a show for the Los Angeles Football Club called 110 Football. So I'm just writing a bunch of sketches for a soccer show. And then I just punched up a special the other day. Somebody's got a comedy special coming out, and I just punched up the whole thing. And so I just do a lot of that stuff. It's like I never really know what sort of, you know, gig I'm going to get, but that's where I'll go. Like, I love stand-up. It's my favorite thing on earth. You know, it's like it's the reason I will drive to Burbank to do your show in front of a drum set, you know, in front of like 15, 20 people. It's because I love stand-up. It's my favorite thing. But it's like it's not at all the most profitable, unless you're like literally one of seven people on the planet.
Right. No, it's true. It's especially right now, it's impossible. It's impossible. Now you've done several late night talk shows.
Mm-hmm.
You want to tell us which ones? I know you did the Tonight Show. How many times did you do the Tonight Show?
I was booked on it four times, but I was canceled three. So I only actually did it one time, but okay. I was paid four times.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah, I was excited about it.
And you got to meet Jay Leno and talk to Jay Leno. How was it? Can you tell us about that experience?
About meeting Jay Leno?
No, about being on the show and meeting Jay Leno and just the whole thing. You'd have been on Conan already, right?
I have not done Conan. Oh. I have not done Conan. I did Kimmel. I did Tonight Show. I did Arsenio. And that's it. I didn't do Letterman. I would have done Letterman, but I didn't become close with the booker until after it went off the air. And he was like, "Oh, you'd have been great for the show." I'm like, "Thanks."
Is that Eddie? You're talking about Eddie?
Yeah, Eddie's amazing. But Eddie's one of the funniest dudes. So it was just a weird experience. It was just like something I've always wanted to do, and then I got an opportunity to do it, and then I got bumped, and then I got an opportunity to do it, and then I got bumped, and I got an opportunity to do it, and I was bumped. And like 2 years went by, and it was like they announced that he was then he left, and Conan was on as him, and then he came back, and then he was not announced he was leaving again. And then I think my manager at the time, Barry Katz, was just like, are you guys going to fuck this kid forever or just, you know, the 3 years you fucked him? And they're like, okay, we'll get him on. And then like 2 weeks later, there was a cancellation and I got a phone call and I was literally doing laundry. And Barry's like, what are you doing tonight? And I'm like, I have a show in San Diego. I'm getting $100. And he's like, no, you're not. You're doing the Tonight Show. I'm like, fuck those guys. I'm not going to go there again and sit there in that stupid room with a dumb cheese tray and not go on again. He's like, no, you're going on. He's like, you're guest. You're the number two guest. I'm like, shut up. So I was like, all right. And I went home and then he's like, the car will pick you up at 3. I got home, fucking car picked me up at 3, went to the studio. I was the very first comedian to ever make his debut on the Tonight Show in the 2 spot and not the 3 spot. Because the singer winner of The Voice was this young girl who they didn't think could carry 2 segments. So they had me come on and do more time. And then they had her come on, sing afterwards and talk for 2 seconds. And they were right. She was an amazing vocalist and 16-year-old girl from high school who was like, yeah. So it was fun. It was a good experience.
I saw the picture of you sitting on the couch talking to Jay. So he talked to you afterwards. That's always good, right?
Yeah. The whole thing was wonderful. I mean, like there's no anybody who goes on and has one of those experiences. It's every single thing that you do stand up for. It's you don't do stand up to kill it in Burbank in front of 30. You don't do stand up to crush at the Laugh Factory. You don't do stand up to be the funniest guy at the Ice House or like the biggest person at the Comedy Castle and wherever. You do stand up so you can have Jay Leno or Conan just tap his cards and be like, this next guy, this next person, he's going to be at the Wherever Palace in bullshit Minnesota tomorrow night. Please welcome. And then that's it. That's your Super Bowl. And you don't know if your Super Bowl is going to come at the end of the season, the beginning of your career. You just can't fuck up. You can fuck up at bullshit Minnesota Comedy Club. You can fuck up wherever. If you fuck up in front of 4 million people with the internet available and accessible, it's lights out, Girl Scout. You're done. So with that in mind, I walked out there and the very first time I was nervous. Second time I was nervous. The third time I was angry. And the fourth time I did not give a fuck. I was like, they're going to fucking stop me at any second. I was standing behind the curtain. I've got this big gold curtain. I've got this lady, the stage director. She's like, are you ready? And I'm like, I am. She's like, are you nervous? I'm like, fuck no. I don't even think this is going to happen. And she's like, good for you. And then she's like, it's happening. And she opened the door. And I walked out and it was just like, it was one of those things where everything worked. You have sets where everything doesn't work. You have sets where, I mean, I don't even know the set that they approved because it was a year prior. So I did all new stuff that they'd never heard, but it was all stuff that I was fresh with that I felt good about. And it was like, so when they were like, they're like, are you going to do that joke about this? And I'm like, uh-huh. And it was just like, I just didn't do it. And it wasn't trying to be a rebel. I was like, this is my one chance. Jay is not coming back. In the event that there's another Tonight Show, there's going to be different bookers. So if I piss off these guys, they're not going to work here anymore. And it's going to be a different host. So as long as I kill, that's all that matters. And I mean, it just like from the moment I opened my mouth to the last word, it was just like God smiled and said, this is what it's like to fail and not win for 4 million hours. And this is what it's like to just be rewarded. And you're like, cool. And then the best part about comedy is the reality of it is like the second you're done with the Super Bowl, the second you've just been given $2,000 to do 5 minutes of stand-up in front of millions of people on a national television show where you were picked up by a chauffeur, you were taken home, you were given a plaque, you were given things to frame photographs that you can get hundreds and thousands of likes on. The next day, you're probably in front of 4 people in the middle of like fucking nowhere and no one gives a shit. Yep. You're like, yeah, you've seen them on the Tonight Show. Now you paid $2. Come on. So it is pretty what it is.
How do you keep your motivation?
I mean, everybody who does what they love is motivated. You know, if you're, I think what is there was a, there was something that I read today that I thought was very entertaining. And someone said that Elon Musk was doing a talk and someone said to him, do you have any advice or motivations for entrepreneurs? And he said, if you're an entrepreneur and you need motivation or advice, you shouldn't be an entrepreneur. Right. And I mean, what's my motivation with comedy? Making people laugh, being good, you know, telling the joke, moving on to the next. That's my motivation to be like I want to say something that's going to make someone laugh till they hurt. Not at the moment, obviously, but like, I want someone to just like feel like, oh, and just have that. That's why I do it. And I like doing it because I like having enough knowledge of language to push things to where people think I'm talking about something where I probably am, but I don't ever actually say it. So it's not like a thing and it's makes them think and it's cool. That's why I do it. I don't know if that's right, but it's right for me. So therefore it's right.
Yeah. It is a tough thing. I think for me, obviously I want to make people laugh. For me, I want that perfect set. You know, right. I'm always trying to go for that perfect set. And, I, rather than do what you did and go on the road, I did the road, but I didn't do it to the extent that you did. Rather than do that, I wanted to, I couldn't stand going on these poorly produced shows constantly. You know what I mean? So I made the decision to start producing.
Right.
And that way I could do as much time as I wanted and I can control the room and the audience and stuff like that. Because for me, it's like, you know, you go to one room, you kill it. You go to the next room, people are sitting there staring at you. And because you know, everything's screwed up and they don't know that they're the audience. They don't understand that the lighting, the sound is off and all that other stuff.
Right. You know?
So that's why rather than do what you did, I decided to produce shows. So,
yeah, I mean, whatever you're happy you're doing is what you should do.
Yeah. Well, it just gave me more stage time in front of better audiences, I felt, you know?
Right.
So, and now you also worked on Idiot Test.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
With Ben Glebe.
You are right? Correct. Yeah, absolutely.
He's a great guy. I've hung out with him several times. He's good friends with Ben Morrison and everything.
I like both of the Bens.
Yeah, the Bens. I took a picture. I go, look at this. I got the Bens. Whatever. I took a picture with both of them. So how was that? How was that working on the show? And how was your day to day on that? How does a show like that work as a writer?
I would say, and I've said this, on another channel, I'd say it pretty openly. Working with Ben is like working with no one you've ever worked with. He has exactly what it is he wants to do in his brain. He knows, and he's very specific, and he's very focused. And it's like, if you don't want to get on the same page he's on, it's like, get the fuck out of here. And I respect the hell out of that. And so he works harder than anyone I really know. I mean, like, I would get there in the morning at like 8 o'clock, and then I would prep contestants, and then I would prep him. We would tape five shows. And then I would sit there with him with all the jokes till like 11, 12 o'clock at night and him going over everything with how he wanted to say it and everything. And so it's like, these are long days and he worked his ass off. So that experience was a great experience for my very first television show to work on. Well, my very first big television show, like network, game show network isn't really big, but it isn't like big, like 2, 4, and 7, like ABC, CBS. NBC, Fox, I guess. But that was a really great experience, and I met a lot of cool people, and I learned TV, and I learned what's important in TV and what isn't, and how to do it, and it's a pretty big machine.
Yeah, I mean, you say that wasn't like a network show, but everybody knows that show.
Idiot Test? Yeah. It was a great show. I mean, it really worked. We did like 300 and some episodes.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
I had no idea. Now, who's the, was that? So Ben started that whole thing. Like, No. He got cast in it or what?
Yeah. Well, what happened was, if I remember correctly, and I didn't come on until much later than he was the one who got me the job. So I'm very thankful for that. But there was a production company called H2R, which is the Rosenblatt brothers, Adam and Jamie, and a guy named Christian Harloff. They bought the rights to Idiot Test, the app. And then they were able to turn it into a game and partner it with GSN and make it a show.
Oh, wow. So did Ben know them? Did they cast for it, or did Ben know them?
I think what happened, well, so Ben is tremendous at improvisation, and he's also really good at with crowds. So basically, I think, I don't know the connection that brought those two together. Either Ben worked on something with them before, and they remembered him and brought him in. But I guess they brought him in to do the run through at Game Show Network to pitch the show, and I guess he destroyed, and then that's how he got the gig.
What is your favorite? We always ask comedians this. What is your favorite show? What is one of your favorite shows you've done where you just annihilated and just loved it and got what? Yeah, pick a show that you just remember as one of your greatest shows.
I don't know if I could remember of like one of them. I don't look at each one as an individual accomplishment. I just look at it like I want to perform and have fun and do my best. And if I enjoy myself the entire time, I mean, the dream gig was the Tonight Show. It was like 15 or 14 applause breaks, perfect sound.
Wow.
Killer, yeah. Killer, everything. And then, you know, but like, can you say anything at all about like being able to perform in front of 70,000 people? Like it did, like I've been able to do that a couple of different times, and it's just like, there's no words. It's like, you have no idea if you're killing or not killing, because even if you're like, if you're in front of 70,000 people and your joke sucks and only like, I don't know, 2% of the people like it, still several hundred people laughing at your joke. And if you're like, they're up front, that's all you give a fuck about, you know? So I don't know. I don't know if I have a good show. I don't know. I know I've had a bunch of bad ones. It's just been like something cool to do. I mean, it's such a great question by you, because I don't know if it's answerable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like, how can you say this was my greatest show to date? And then you would try to be like searching to be better than that show. And
right.
Maybe like, and God forbid, what if that was your best show? Then like, maybe you'll never have another show again that good. And you have to live all your life knowing that you've done your best show. It's a great question. Should ask everybody that question.
Well, I just remember moments, you know, I remember specific shows where we had an audience and one audience member started heckling me. I was making her laugh. I was tearing her apart. The audience was dying. And I said to the audience, I can't do my jokes because, you know, once you're tearing apart a heckler, mm-hmm. it's hard to go back to jokes.
Yeah.
And so then another audience member started yelling at her. He goes, shut up, bitch. And they started arguing. Oh. And then I basically was making faces, looking at my watch, and the audience was dying because they were arguing, didn't see what I was doing. And I wound up crawling through the sound window backwards through this tiny sound window, and the roof blew off the place. Everybody was stood up and were screaming and slapping, you know. So I just remembered moments like that, you know.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's great. And I'm sure it was amazing. Whenever a comic walks off stage and they're like, I blew the doors off the place, or I like, oh, good luck following that. And it's just like, okay, comedy. It's like, comedy's not tough. You know what I mean? Right. It's not like, you're like, ooh, I killed. Ooh, did you comic? Did you comedy man? Did you comedy girl? Did you kill? It's like, ooh, you told jokes and people laughed. You're so mighty, so fierce. And it's one of those things where I think one of my favorite comedy shows that I've ever seen, one of the, like, this is the most telling thing, or one of the most telling things I've seen, is I think you could argue and say that one of the most coveted comedy spots 2021, hosting SNL if you're a stand-up, what would be better?
Yeah.
Okay, so Bill Burr goes on 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, whenever it was. has an amazing monologue. Yep. And he had four or five jokes that were like, and this is Bill fucking Burr.
Yeah.
Who opens with a great, how great it is that Rick Moranis got punched in the face. New York's back, baby. Like kills. And he literally is up on stage and he did an open mic move. He was like, these are the jokes. That's my time. Got a few more minutes. Like he was uncomfortable. And like, cause the audience wasn't good. Cause he had to go back in front of one of the first crowds and he had to go back in front of a bunch of people who were not really willing to admit that maybe they've been too uptight in front of their computers. Like that to me, I would love to see Chappelle, and I've seen Chappelle at the Laugh Factory with like Cat Williams at like 2 o'clock in the morning when Dave's just fucking talking until it's time for his plane. That's one of the greatest things I've ever seen. Cause that's real. That's not polished. Comedy, like at Chappelle's level, on his special level, where a Chris Rock or like an Eliza or like a Wendy Lehman or like these great comics, you have this, like, it's not what comedy really is. If a comedy was like that every time, it would suck.
Yeah.
I mean, like, honestly, I would bet those guys love getting kicked in the dick every once in a while, because otherwise it's like everything is, you know, stadium and arena and like, and that's, you know, and it's like, and it's also very confusing because like I've worked with acts where I've walked off stage and I've just been so thrilled to be there and so happy to be able to be on this big, huge stage because of them. And I built so lucky, and I've seen them walk off and be like, thank you. All right, New York, I'll be back. And I'm like throngs of people going crazy and standing up, and they'll walk off and be like, that crowd fucking sucked. I hated them. Like,
wow.
What? Because it's real. It's like who we are, and it doesn't change on any level.
Do you think the fact that everybody had to sit at home is part of the reason that everybody became so extra PC and extra, sensitive about comics and comedy in general? Because you brought up Bill Burr on Saturday Night Live. I kind of feel like if people had lives, you know what I mean? They wouldn't be so all the time, you know?
I think so. It's hard to say. I mean, you can't say what if we weren't in pandemic for the last
right,
year.
Right. But it seems to me that the pandemic it's just amplified everybody's emotions and feelings because they're all shut-ins now. You know what I mean?
I mean, shut-ins is a great way of saying it. And it's like, but in addition to being shut-ins, it's like, they're also sort of like, a lot of people experience like solitary confinement.
Yeah.
And that made like one of my favorite things to do is look at Instagram every couple of weeks and see which one of my friends is losing their shit. And it's like, and you see them and you're just like, I mean, like I had a buddy call me last night and I was just like, I couldn't do it. So I just handed the phone to my girlfriend. And I fell asleep. And this morning I was like, what was that like? And she's like, he just needed someone to talk to. And I'm like, really? She goes, yeah, he just talked for like 40 minutes. And then I was like, well, he's not waking up. So good talking to you. And, it was funny because she wasn't wrong. And he was like, I had a great chat with your girlfriend last night. Everything was cool. I feel so great to talk to somebody. And I'm like, awesome.
Well, your girlfriend should talk to half of America, I think, then.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely.
That would help a lot. All right, listen, I know you got to go soon. We just got a quick thing since you've done so many game shows. We came up with a stupid segment that you got to judge between me and Kevin.
All right, I'm ready.
I just want to take a moment to say how much I've enjoyed your visit to the show.
Oh, thanks, Kevin. I appreciate it.
And now for the Intergalactic TikTok Champion of the Universe contest. Nah!
That's our. I thought we had music on there, but maybe not.
This is no small stakes.
That's all my fault.
And now for the Intergalactic TikTok Champion of the Universe contest. Nah!
Much better. There we go.
I think so.
All right. So what happened was Kevin and I recently started doing TikToks. We have no idea what we're doing. So we had a TikTok contest.
Okay.
There's three different TikToks. One is dance. One is lip sync, and one is for the most original. So
you each did one of each of these?
Yes. Yes. We made the effort. They're going to be terrible, but we, yeah, let's just, you hey, judge. You I, judge.
Which one are you? Go ahead, Kevin.
I spent like 6 minutes thinking about this. Don't say.
Which one?
Okay, it's Kevin, just haphazard here,
Kevin. Which
is, 6 days.
Which is your favorite of the three, Kevin?
The one where I dance.
Okay, and Danny, which one is your favorite?
The one where I lip sync.
I want to see dance versus lip sync.
Well, we're gonna show.
But then you're missing out on some real originality.
All right. Well, then I want to see all of them.
All right, let's do it.
Mushy mushy.
Awful.
No, I'm digging it.
Second one, that's not fair.
Danny,
is that KFitz.com? Because I'm following that.
Yes, it is. Yes,
did you do is. All 60 minute one or 60 second ones, Kevin?
No, just that one.
All right,
how could you turn
one.
That fire off halfway, Danny?
Let's see the second one.
Wait, who won the first one?
Kevin
won that one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kevin won that one.
Well, it was funny because when he first started doing it and I started seeing green stuff, I was like, is that supposed to be like, is he farting? Is that, oh, that's his green screen. Because at first I thought it was like a cool thing that you were doing in the city. And then I was like, nope, that's his green screen.
That's what made it hilarious that his green screen kept screwing up because of its dance.
Yeah, it was great.
All right.
All right, I'm ready. I think Kevin won that one too. I haven't seen his yet.
Alice Crew in effect. You know what I'm saying?
There it is.
Seriously fine.
There it is.
Word him up.
Word him up.
Yo, Jake. King King from Queens come king. We're raising hell like a class when the lunch bell rings. The king will be.
I was actually I was at that concert.
That's not fair.
That was the Raisin Hell tour.
We couldn't see your lips.
That was part of the show.
You're disqualified on that one.
I actually met Run DMJ on Astor Street on off of Broadway back in 1988.
Nice.
Long time ago. Yes. I take it I won that one too.
Yeah, absolutely.
No way.
Yeah. I mean, I think Danny, you would have won that one if your whole if you had like an entire mouth covered in blood. And you were holding a chicken, and like then I've been like, that's commitment.
I got to tell you, Danny, I think I'm gonna go 3 for 3.
Oh man, I didn't
it's
know
possible.
About the green screen.
Oh
let's
wait,
see it. Let's see it.
Oh, this is gonna be awful. I went for drama on this one.
I got money's all I gotta make. Dollar bills is all I think about every day. I got money's all I gotta make. Straight to the bank, got some checks self-made. I got money's all I gotta make. Dollar bills is all I think about every day. I got money's all I gotta make. Straight to the bank, got some checks self-made.
That's aluminum foil, by the way. On my teeth.
It felt like it was longer than the Freebird solo. All right, let's see the last one.
Hey, boy, are New York and L.A. different. Like, one's in California, and the other's in New York. Thank you.
Kevin, you were doing so good till that last one. you were doing so good. You were I was going to blindly award you the victory. But I gotta tell you, I gotta just say, based on the this is how I'm awarding, based on the awesomeness of your first two, is why I'm not angry with you at that joke.
The last one was supposed to be the least original thing, down to having the TV on in the background.
No, it was wonderful. It was. I think. Listen, I do TikToks. They're hard as fuck. I mean, like we're not the demo.
It's no, like, no.
And you see, it's like, I mean, I see these kids who do these things, and I'm absolutely. I think they're well worth the 28 million views or whatever they have. But I mean, here's the funniest thing that you need to know about TikTok. So recently, there was a kid at Starbucks who did this Starbucks viral video with a bunch of his coworkers, and it got like 3 or 4 million views, and he got his ass fired. And they didn't do anything gross. It was when the place was closed and they were cleaning. They just joked around about how, and they got fired. And the kid was like, yeah, I got three. And they're like, but you're viral now and you're famous. And he's like, I don't give a fuck about that. And he's like, I don't get money. He's like, I want my job back. Get my fucking job back.
That's crazy.
It's great.
That's crazy. Well, Chris, thank you so much. I know you got things to do.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, yeah. We'd love to have you back at some point.
Of course.
If you think of any funny segments or ever, anything, just let me know. Because Kevin cheated.
Chris, I'll see you on TikTok.
I'm going to fire him.
I'm going to follow both of you guys on TikTok.
Chris, thank you so much. We're going to do a segment now called Ask Anthony. Chris, we'll talk to you later, buddy.
Tastes like victory.
What are the best movies for a spring break marathon?
How you doing, gentlemen? How you doing? I'm on spring break.
Nice.
What's going on?
Dude, I'm excited for this one.
Just are you?
Basking in my intergalactic championship. All that's going on here.
I got to be honest. I thought you were very creative. I thought you were doing a bit of behind the scenes, behind the wizard's curtain, showing the green screen. I thought it was genius.
You just got bad lighting.
No, I think it was intentional. Even with the effect called green screen, I figured throwing a green screen behind me is very literal, very meta.
Honestly, I think I want that as like my computer screensaver. It was awesome. I could have watched that for another 5 minutes, man.
The belly dropping down. I actually tried to drop down and like fan my knees out, but my fat stomach actually got in the way. It was the weirdest feeling I could possibly describe.
Perhaps a blessing in disguise.
It may very well have been the better part of valor.
But I will say, your lip sync was spot on.
Thank you.
It was amazing. And I felt it. As somebody who does lip sync for a living?
Sure. No, that's the highest praise. And I have a high regard for Anthony.
Thank you, sir. Likewise. And yes, even the work I do lately, we have to put masks over the mouths after they're lip sync. So I understand what it looks like. I know if it's out of sync, and you, sir, were right there. So
I actually was lip syncing along, but I thought the mask was funny.
Oh, it was hilarious. Okay, so we're doing a special request by Danny. Naturally, it's spring break. So naturally, we're going to do spring break. But I didn't have the foresight for that. I was going to do sci-fi.
Ah.
But here we are doing spring break. I mean, look at me. I got a nice resort, a private resort here. You know, I got a bunch of ladies chilling beside me. I don't know if you can see that. It's a little dark here. But
I can't see it.
You can't see it? Well,
no.
Here we go.
Okay.
Private resort. So we're going to get into it. These are basically the spring break movies. If you're in a marathon, these are the ones to do. And I got to tell you, most of them are going to Fort Lauderdale. Most of them have the same plot. But we're just going to kind of skate down memory lane with them and maybe talk about some of our own spring break stories. Cool?
Sounds good to me, buddy.
Love
awesome. So the first one we're going to do is Spring Break. That's right. I believe this is a 1983. Sean Cunningham, the director of Friday the 13th, produced and directed the sex comedy. See, I still don't have my camera cues, no matter which room I'm in. And it's quite dated looking, but it's a fun flick. Basically, a couple guys from the city go to Fort Lauderdale, and their motel room is overbooked, and there's a couple nerds sharing it. And they show these nerds a good time. The end. Okay? The
end. Was in that? Anybody of note?
Off the top, no.
Was that the guy from Killer Clowns from Outer Space?
Not Grant Kramer. He's the Hard Bodies guy.
Oh, okay. I knew he was one of those. Okay.
And I'm gonna bring back that one anyway because, like, as you recall, we did the sex comedy one. But I'm going to bring back Hard Bodies once we do Summer because inevitably we're going to revisit a lot of these titles. On to the next one, we're going to be doing Where the Boys Are. Now, this is a classic, okay? This is a classic. Basically, it's about four gals who go on a misadventures in Fort Lauderdale.
What year is that one? That's old.
It's like 60s, I believe.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And then they actually, we're going to cut to 1984, Where the Boys Are 84. Now, they share similar plots in that it's four leading ladies going to Fort Lauderdale and having misadventures, but they're quite different. And my sensibilities, even though the first one's a sweet flick, I land on this one. Hold on.
Especially as a teenager.
Especially as a 44-year-old. But yes, as a teenager. Yeah. No, it's just it's a fun flick, and each gal's different, of course. You got like an ensemble cast, you know, with different personalities and so on and so forth. So they all have their, you know, misadventures, as I said. It's a fun one. It's worth marathoning or just watching as a standalone. But don't ignore the first one. The first one's not bad. And George Hamilton's in that one.
Ah, right.
Quick question. Do you have any spring break stories? Harken back.
Okay. So I was just at the beginning of the show, I was saying I never got to really do a spring break. What I did for one spring break was I went to Syracuse with the wide receiver buddy of mine for the Alfred football team. And we went to he showed me all the bars in Syracuse and it was actually great. We hooked up with a couple beautiful girls, had a great time. And then when I got back to college, I actually had alcohol withdrawal. I was like shaking for the first day I got back.
So you went hardcore.
Well, it was beer, but it was like a lot of beer. It was a lot of beer.
Well,
this is back in college, though. This was way, way long time ago.
I think it's time for another spring break adventure, sir.
Uh-oh.
Maybe 2022. On to the next. We got Revenge of the Nerds, too. Now, everyone has seen Revenge of the Nerds, a rated R flick from 84. Pretty hardcore at that.
It was it was a great movie, dude. That movie was so funny. We watched it again. Me and Steve actually just watched that again. And, dude, it was funny. It was really funny.
Oh, it's great. It's totally great. I mean, as we discussed before, there's some things that don't hold up in society. But the film itself, you know, it's the film.
The one that doesn't hold up is when
suspension disbelief.
When she doesn't know who she's having sex with until after that would never be acceptable today.
Well, of course, absolutely. You know, but you know, in the message that they were trying to, because at the end of the day, sadly, in that day and age, it's always like the jocks were the coolest and the nerds were nerds. The nerds weren't like the passionate tech guys that get, you know, laid now.
Yeah,
let's be truthful. At the time, it was a real absolute divide. So in a film, well, if a beautiful girl is not going to, again, in the film, if a beautiful girl is not going to hook up with a nerd, I know this is where I can get in trouble, but the point is he had to prove that all nerds do is think about sex and all jocks do is think about sports. That was the message.
That was the line that then, she's like,
should he be in prison? Nerds? Maybe. I don't know. But, you know, like... but it's a fun film, so let's just look at the sequel. How's that? Let's look at the sequel.
Let's look at this. Yeah, there you go.
So they go to Fort Lauderdale, and basically they run into the Alpha Betas. The Tri-Lams, our nerd pals, run into the Alpha Betas, and they are not welcome in Fort Lauderdale. And there's just a series of fun things that go on. It's PG-13, but it's still a little edgy. Totally recommend it. Totally fun. There's really not a mean bone in this film's body. So Spring Break, Fort Lauderdale, Revenge of the Nerds 2.
I just remember back when the second one came out, I was so disappointed it was rated PG-13.
Really? Yeah, I feel you. I kind of felt the same with Police Academy, but I was still, at least part two, because it was PG-13.
Yeah.
But I was still like, oh, because PG-13 was new then. You know, in 85, 87, it had kind of, you know, wore out its welcome. But, it still had edge to it, though. But, yes, rated R is rated R.
Right, right.
Yeah. Quick question. Kevin, do you have any spring break stories, whether it's Fort Lauderdale or painting your house? What happened?
I certainly don't have anything fancy like Syracuse. I was never big on taking the trips with, you know, 14 people in a hotel room. So we would, you know, basically stay home and roofie ourselves.
Love it. Say no more.
Yeah.
You and who are you talking about? Mike.
Cheers.
He thinks we are roofied. Cheers, buddy.
It's a sport now. I'm semi-pro.
You for sure. All right. Spring break. So we're going to move on. This one's not in Fort Lauderdale. This one is in Palm Springs. Boom. Actually starring a young Tim Robbins.
Oh, wow.
And if you look at the poster, you may recognize that's Stephen Jeffries. He played now known as Evil Ed in Fright Night. So he was in Fright Night. He was also in 976 Evil.
Oh, yeah. You know,
played Hoax, funny because I think.
That guy was a great actor.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got, he went off the rails.
But he came back. He's actually in a friend's film. This is 10 years ago was the comeback. My friend Evan McGar, who actually runs a horror convention in North Carolina and actually nationwide called Mad Monster Party. Evan made a film called Sick Girl, and Stephen Jeffries, his big comeback was he played a teacher in the film. And I think he's worked a little bit consistently since. So he was definitely off the map. I'm with you, but he was off the map for a while, but he's working and
good for
fans accept him back. Absolutely. Bring it back.
I always hate to see a good actor go off the rails.
When Danny said off the rails, that he was using the rails euphemism for cocaine. So off the rails would then mean rehabilitating, and I was excited for him.
Oh, I had no idea.
I don't know, he
had switched industries, but then he's now working in
David East.
Yeah. Oh, so you know about this gentleman.
Oh, yeah.
I met him a couple times. He's a nice guy.
Can we say what happened or no?
Well, yeah. I mean, why not? I mean, it's fine.
He got into porn.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Okay.
He got into an adult entertainment, sir.
Right.
But yeah, that's some trivia. Not a lot of people know. So, wow.
I'm on the inside.
Clearly. But Fraternity Vacation, 1985 film, young Tim Robbins. Basically, it's kind of the old story. You know, these two guys go to Palm Springs. The nerd's father, I'm just going to use my left hand from now on. That's it. I figured it out. I'm going to tie my right arm behind my back because Susanna, God bless her, is always there. So the it's up to me reversed. To be there too.
Point
I,
to the
no,
other
I don't
side.
Want to go there, Susanna. I don't want to go there, Susanna. Can we go back to Fraternity Vacation? I'm going to use my right arm now. Okay. God bless. Now she's just messing with me. Anyway, young Tim Robbins, and they go to Palm Springs, and the nerd, who is Stephen Jeffries' character, his dad foots the bill. So the nerd gets into a ton of misadventures, and Tim Robbins and his buddy get into some rival frat bet. At the end of the day, it's a fun PG-13 film. I recommend it for spring break. The end.
Awesome.
Now, question before we go on to the next. Do you guys have any, off the top of your head, this is kind of a wild card, spring break movies in mind, or just when you think of a spring break film, is there anything you think of? Like what
Johnny
do you
got? Depp. Johnny Depp. That's the one I was thinking of. Johnny Depp. That was one of my favorite ones.
Well, we might as well go on to what Susanna just put on, because that's the one you're talking about.
Oh, really? Is that the one? Ah, see?
Yeah. And that's what this is right here, the standee. Hello. Private resort.
Okay, there you go.
I don't even see it.
I thought those were candy bars. I couldn't.
Negative. Private resort, we did this on the sex comedy segment. It totally holds up. And by the way, the gentleman, left arm, shit, the gentleman in the photo, that's not even Johnny Depp or anybody who's in the film. So they're just like poster guys, poster models.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah, I didn't realize until like 20 years after. anyway, it's totally a rad film. It totally holds up. It actually looks really clean in terms of photography. It's a crisp print. The transfer is wonderful. It's just a madcap. Super sex comedy. And they go to a private resort. And there's so much eye candy in this, it's like a problem. And, you know, God love her. Also, Leslie Easterbrook from Police Academy is in this film.
Oh, really?
And Hector Elizondo. Yeah. And Rob Morrow from Northern Exposure and Mother with Albert Brooks.
Oh, that's
and,
right. That's yeah. right.
Yeah, there's a lot of, it's just a fun film. So
I forgot he was in. The thing I liked about that film, aside from the eye candy or whatever you want to call it.
I mean, there's eye candy for anybody. I mean, everyone is like just shining bodies left and right. Like,
yeah, 100%.
No stone unturned in this film.
No, yeah, no. Men, women, everything. Even older women. And
100%. And if that's your thing, men. They got it.
Yeah. And, but the thing I liked about it was it had this sitcomish type of miscommunication going on all the time, which made it yes. funny. It reminded me of Three's Company a little bit.
Yes, it's madcap for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And the acting was the actors were fun. I mean, I thought they did a great job doing the comedy.
Unfortunately, Johnny Depp doesn't necessarily acknowledge this film, but like, I mean, I watch this once a year. So
right.
His fans acknowledge it. So maybe one day if I ever run into him, he can begrudgingly scratch my VHS print. But I wouldn't bet on it.
I mean, that
on to the next film.
Didn't that help his career, though? That helped his career, I think.
Of course. It's all a stepping stone to where it is now, you know.
That was a big movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, on to the next film. What do we got here? Boom, boom, boom. Man, this is a problem. So this is set in Lake Victoria, which is a fictitious place for, like, Lake Powell, Utah, Arizona. And if you haven't seen it, it is full of boobs, full of butts, and full of blood.
Wow, I have not seen this.
Oh, it's awesome. And yeah, it's super gory. It's from the director of the Hills Have Eyes remake, which I found to be very good. His name is Alexander Aja. He's a French director. He also made the recent alligator film called Crawl.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Excellent. Yes, I loved it. In fact, I
keep going back to that movie, though. When the guy's arm got ripped off, and then the rest of the movie, he still was functional. I'm sorry, but your arm gets ripped off. You're not going to just be, you're going to be screaming in pain the whole time. You're going to bleed out. You're not going to survive unless you got a tourniquet on your, I don't know if they did the tourniquet, but.
I've seen this movie now, or at least Crawl. Kevin knows what's coming. I've seen Crawl now 4 or 5 times because I keep showing friends. And I think he loses his arm at the end, and then it's just the end after a few more scenes.
Yeah, but he's still talking like normal. He goes, let's do this, let's do that. I'd be like, ah, just the whole time.
Fair enough. Thank God it didn't happen in the first act, but it was definitely third act appendage problems.
It's a flesh wound.
Come on, how much?
It's a flesh wound, yeah.
You wouldn't just be having conversations. You would. You know,
well, it's not like it's just like he lopped his arm off. He's like, listen, I really got to take out the trash. It was none of that.
Yeah, but he's not even going, ow, or ouch, ow.
He was in shock. Well, he screamed, I imagine.
He's in shock, but has normal conversations.
I'll have to watch it for a 6th time just for this, you know, to make it accurate. But to get back to Piranha 3D, I think it came out in 2010. It's pretty good. It actually opens up with Richard Dreyfuss drinking Amity beer.
Ah.
Like a little throwback to Jaws, yeah.
Sure.
And Christopher Lloyd is actually in it. He's like the scientist who understands Piranha. And the whole time, it's so funny, the whole time he's literally playing Doc Brown. He's like, without saying, Great Scott! He's basically saying, Great Scott! The whole time. It's so fun.
So wait, this was after Back to the Future?
Oh, well, yeah, it was 2010. Yeah, absolutely. So
that's crazy that he went. Okay. All right.
Christopher Lloyd still acts.
No, but, I know that. I know that. But it's crazy that he chose a role in such like a. It's a B movie, right? It's
not, yeah, but the directors, I think at that point, well respected. He came onto the scene. I believe Alexander Aja's father was a French director. Some of the movies he's done escapes me, but he was well regarded. And. Okay. When Alex came onto the scene, he made a movie called Hot Tension, or Hout Tension, High Tension, foreign film. Totally brutal. Like, okay. He's a horror director, and he's known for his brutality in his films. But when he came onto the scene, this is after Hills Have Eyes remake, Piranha 3D just, I don't know, however they got him attached, they understood. I mean, Ving Rhames is in it, Elizabeth Shue.
Like, wow.
And also they respect the original Piranha. Like, they knew the studio wasn't going to mess with the property that is Piranha. You know, directed by Joe Dante.
What?
The original. No. Yes. Yeah.
Okay, now I have to watch it. I have to watch it.
79. Love the original 79 one. Yeah, yeah.
I love Joe Dante, man. I got to check that out. But I think one of the other reasons they probably signed on was because that's when 3D just really came out and started becoming popular in the movie theaters, wasn't it?
I got to say it wasn't. Robert Rodriguez is one of the reasons why it actually started becoming popular again. Almost several years earlier, like, he started doing Spy Kids 3D. And the studios were like, nah, it's not going to work. Nobody cares about it. And all of a sudden people care about it. And then they started, literally every other movie started becoming 3D. If you start looking, like, in 2004, 5, 6, 8, 9. And they just wanted to do a 3D one because the trend was, it's making money. You know, it's double the ticket. But it was still kind of the sweet spot of 3D. But Robert Rodriguez, I feel, really deserves the credit for bringing 3D back.
Yeah. Well, he's another guy that I'd like to look at my movie too.
I actually met him.
Really?
We were watching, long story short, too late. I was watching a tribute band called Lights. I think it's a Journey tribute band, like a Latino Journey tribute band, at a place in the Valley. And I was hanging out there, and I looked behind me, and it's Robert Rodriguez and Rose McGowan.
Oh my God.
Yes. At the time they were dating.
Wow.
And I was like, holy shit. So actually, it's funny because with me, randomly, I had some B movies on DVD in my girlfriend's purse. Stuff that he totally would love. And I ended up, like, basically getting on my, like, T-Mobile Sidekick, and I texted a message and I passed my phone to him, and he read it, and it basically said, hey, my name's Anthony, blah, 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 blah. At the time I was making a picture, and I told him a little bit about it. And I said, hey, you know, if you want a tour of South Park, you know, I would love to give that to you. Or if anything, just come by for the food. The catering is great. Gave me his email. He was super nice. Gave me a thumbs up. Texted some stuff back to me as a response with my phone. And then, you know, and then Rose McGowan recommended for Weddings and a Funeral remake. The end.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm going off. But yeah, so Piranha 3D is really good. So, yeah.
Wow. Awesome. Awesome.
Yeah. All right. So moving on, we've got one or two more. We got, okay, so Spring Breakers. Okay. Have you heard of this one?
No.
So this is relatively recent. I think it's like, God, I think I have it right here. 2012. I'm going to
James Franco.
Yeah, 2012. This movie, you know, it's right there on the bottom. This movie fucking sucks. Okay. I don't like it. I don't like it. And it's an experimental film. James Franco is channeling an indie rapper called Riff Raff. No problem with that in terms of his look. But this is written and directed by Harmony Korine, who I believe wrote Kids. Remember Kids from back in the day?
Directed by Larry Clark. That was a big breakout. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a hardcore one. And he went on to do, like, Gummo and Julian Donkey Boy and so on and so forth. All these other, like, trippy films. I was interested in this because of the cast and the fact that it's Harmony Korine. Because I do like his work. He's out there.
Right.
This movie was so experimental and, unfortunately, in my opinion, not in a good way. It all basically boils down to James Franco's a thug. Okay. Can you even use that word these days without people getting pissed? He's a bad guy. Okay.
Yeah. As long as you're not saying you're a thug.
Yeah. No, he's just a bad dude. Right. And these gals go on a spring break. If I recall correctly, I saw it once and I'll never watch it again, but it's called Spring Breaker, so it had to be showcased. And they gravitate towards this figure who's got a bunch of money, but he's a crook, and they start doing crooked things with him. And what's weird about the film, when you're watching it, don't watch it. But if you're watching it, but if you're watching it,
stop immediately.
I feel like I feel like the filmmakers were like watching the cut and editing it, and then once it was done, they're like, no, go back. And they're like, well, why do you want to go back? And the guy's like, because I want to whisper spring break.
No.
100 times throughout the film.
Oh.
So when you're watching the movie, all of a sudden you hear spring break.
Oh, I hate it.
And you're like this.
Yeah, I'm looking for the exit.
What? Why am I hearing this? I get it. It's called Spring Breakers. Like, yes, it's spring break. But it's like a fucking song that goes on for 90 minutes.
So if you're watching it, put in earplugs and cover your eyes.
Yeah.
While you're leaving.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's it for the marathon. That part's the anti-marathon right there.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So that's all I got. You know, it's Fort Lauderdale, Palm Springs, and a private resort in Lake Victoria, which is a fictitious place for piranha. These are places we should visit.
No, that was awesome. That was awesome.
Yeah, no.
I want to go back and look at some of those films now. Certainly the original Piranha, but thanks again. Thanks again, yeah. Anthony. You are always awesome.
I don't know about that, but thank you. Appreciate it.
I always love your segment. Kevin, why Raisin Hell? What is that?
It's National Chocolate-Covered Raisin Day, so I put Raisin Hell as an homage to Run DMC before we decided to do the TikTok contest, which is how I arrived at the song I defeated you with.
How is true in effect, you know what I'm saying?
There it is.
Seriously fine.
There it is.
By the way, I love that segment. I hope that's a thing every week.
We're going to start doing that. We are going to start doing that. Man, I didn't know we could use green screen. I thought we were just going to... All right, fine, whatever.
He's cornered that market. Don't even try. Don't even try.
If he can use it, I can use it.
Good to see you, gentlemen. Until next week.
All right, guys, check out the bottom there. If you want to support anchor.fm / the Danny McDermott Show /support. I'm going to let it roll by one more time. Thank you. Thanks to Jay, Chris Newberg. Thank you for the spring break. Oh, look at that. You made a special little box of it all. That's awesome. Kevin, thank you. You're fired again. That's on the bottom. See the bottom? anchor.fm/the Danny McDermott Show/support. Guys, please help us out. I got to pay somebody here. Have a good one.
Nope.
Blah, 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 blah.